I'm Josie Rodriguez Boucher, and this is the Intersectional Fertility Podcast, where ideas and identities intersect to deepen our understanding of fertility and ultimately our whole selves. Brandy brings over 20 years' experience, awards, and recognition in the beauty industry to her concept. She has spent 15 years proving herself in the highly competitive beauty industry, serving Hollywood elites. Handling the grooming needs of the super image-conscious entertainment world shows she can handle anyone and anything. Being the only child of mixed race in an entire town has been her driving force to enter the beauty industry to educate and inspire change any way she can. Creator and visionary Brandy Andrews dreams of a space where all communities can feel at home, be able to shop products created just for them, and work with experts to care for their hair and skin, a radical new experience for people of color. Brandy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to have you here today. So what are your pronouns and where are you joining us from today?
My pronouns are she and her. And I'm joining you from, well, I'm originally in Los Angeles, but right now I am in Soho, New York.
Nice. So will you share with us a little about kind of what you do, what your story is, what your mission is?
My story and my mission, my everything. Oh, man. Okay. So my story is that I am a first generation Afro-Latina. My mom is from Mexico.
Oh, cool.
She migrated over here in the 70s.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. And my mission is to create a space in the industry that is for everybody, not just for particular groups of people. So that's my mission.
Totally. And you're in the beauty industry?
I am in the beauty industry. Yes.
Yeah. Nice. I love your work. I was looking, poking around on your website.
Oh, thank you.
Gorgeous. So how does parenthood fit in to what you do?
Parenthood fits in, I mean, to, it fits into everything.
Yeah.
Parenthood fits into my story in every capacity because I feel like it is what pushes me and what makes me strive to want to make a bigger difference, especially, you know, having a little boy and, you know, all the stuff that comes along with that. And so everything that I do is to show my son that he can make a difference in the world.
Yeah.
And that he can have an impact, even if it starts out small, you just never know where it can grow from there.
Right.
And once you find, you know, your community, you know, you'll go through a bunch of different phases of, you know, oh, I thought it was this community, and you're just finding yourself, and you're never wrong for just trying to find your niche. You don't have to fit into somebody else's mold. You can just make your own mold.
Yeah, totally. Oh, I love that. And when did you first know that you wanted to become a parent? When did that start in your life?
I think that that was something that was always just ingrained in me. And, you know, it's ingrained in my culture, you know, being a parent, your whole purpose is to have a family and, you know, have kids and do all that stuff. But I changed my narrative. Like, I still have my family, but I had my family, you know, with, you know, a gay man because I wanted to have my life. I didn't want to have to change my life for somebody else.
Yes.
And so thankfully I found in my co-parent, you know, somebody that shared the same values when it comes to that, you know, wanting to have both maternal and paternal figures, you know, but also we have a completely different dynamic.
Right. Right.
Yeah,
totally. I know when I first learned about your story, it was through Mosey Baby. And they were telling me about you and your partner. And I was just like, yes, like full body yes to that, to that arrangement and that creativity and that, you know, like you said, like retelling the narrative, like mm-hmm. taking your story back of how you want your life to be.
Yeah.
I talk about this all the time with my partner, just how the old fashioned like nuclear family is just so not working.
Mm-hmm. We like to call it the nucleus.
Yeah.
We call it the nucleus, Lawrence and I.
Oh, nice.
Because when people say like, oh, you're a new modern fan, like you're a non-traditional, we like to say new traditional.
Yes.
You know, they're like nuclear family. We're like, that's just our nucleus.
Yes.
Like there's so many other cells and atoms and things that you can attach to a nucleus that, you know, but when you come back, that's your core.
I love that.
You know, so with my traditional, you know, Hispanic family, like I don't even necessarily have a traditional family. I was raised by a single mother, you know, and I have three brothers.
Right.
So, you know, that was a non-traditional. So Lawrence likes to call it new traditional.
Yes.
Because we can make it whatever it is that we want. And, you know, obviously people are going to have their opinions, but it's like, how far do I want to let your opinions rule my life?
Exactly.
You know, telling my mother, you know, immigrant from Mexico, you know, even though she's white passing, it's still a generational thing.
Yeah.
And so when I told my mother, she was like, what?
Yeah.
Her first reaction, her first knee-jerk reaction was, nope.
Right, sure.
You know, but out of protection of her child.
Sure.
Because she didn't understand it.
Right.
So because she didn't understand it, it was a little bit more of a tussle mm-hmm. in capacity and, you know, trying to get her to understand because she raised a very strong individual woman.
Right.
So, yeah, trying to shift that narrative. And, I mean, our families are so supportive, you know, and they were just so kind of confused because they just never had heard that. And we're like, look, we're just going to try to make it work.
Right.
Did you try to make it work? And it worked out. Great. Great.
I love that so much. Can you kind of take us to that moment or like where this started? One of the things I just love so much about queer families is that there is mm-hmm. just, there's no pre-prescribed anything of how anything needs to be. And so I love that with queerness comes so much freedom and so much creativity. Mm-hmm. And when I heard about your story, I was just like, I just feel like this could inspire so many other people to open up their mind about what creating a family could look like.
Yeah.
That they don't just have to follow this one method or this one narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So could you kind of bring us to that point of like how you came to that decision? Like what was the starting point?
I mean, it was a conversation that Lawrence and I had on, you know, a Sunday afternoon as we were working at the Abbey. You know, we had been roommates for some time, you know, had sought, you know, solace in one another as individuals, you know, bonding as not only gay people, but people of color,
mm-hmm.
providing a safe space in the community for us, you know, even though our communities, a community, it's not a community.
Uh-huh.
The L very much stays with the L. The G's stay with the G's, the B's and the T's, and then they're all segregated.
Yeah.
And I've even experienced that in San Francisco in the queer community mm-hmm. where it was like, you're not queer, you're a lesbian. I'm like, I thought it was all the same acronym.
Right.
But, you know.
Totally.
It's exhausting sometimes.
Yes.
You know, in that capacity, trying to meld that and kind of break that barrier.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, we're able to create that, but I don't want to paint it as a picture of like, yeah, this is the greatest. And it's the, because it does come with its trials and its tribulations,
mm-hmm.
even though, you know, co-parenting with my best friend, there was still a lot more that we had to unpack,
right.
Like going to the doctors and getting the tests and doing the analysis and the blood testing and all of that stuff that goes with it.
Right.
You know, and that like finding out that Lawrence wouldn't be considered the father, that he would be only considered a donor mm-hmm. and that I had to sign papers willfully accepting his sperm. And there was just a whole bunch of stuff like gay men are seen as unfit donors. And it was just a whole laundry list of things, you know, not to mention, you know, when we went there, our doctor, our fertility doctor, our initial one, she gave us the roadmap. She's like, I'm going to tell you guys some things that you're not going to like.
Mm.
She's like, but this is highly suggested. Like when we went, they were like, you guys have to get attorneys,
wow.
you know, and you guys have to go see a psychologist. And at that time in our, you know, mid to late 20s, we were like, what?
Oh my God.
We're not going to do this. You're not going to tell us how to, up.
Right.
But in all actuality, it was definitely stuff that should have happened in the beginning.
Okay.
Because, you know, we should have gone to a therapist and see like what things were actually making our personality, what traumas of ours, you know, and how well our traumas were going to play together,
right,
you know, and and really getting an understanding of each other's mental health.
Wow.
So in the long run, Dr. Carrie Wambach, which I love so much, she was right.
Okay.
She was absolutely right.
Okay.
You know, the one thing that we did take away from that is, you know, building out a parental agreement. So we pretty much went in a divorce in reverse.
Okay.
We listed mm-hmm. all the things that we fundamentally wanted in a family, like what we saw our values were, but we also update this every year.
Wow.
So down to like me and Lawrence get one full week out of the year to go travel and just do us.
Nice.
And like, just, we call it a mom vacation and a dad vacation. So I'm like, I'm gonna take my mom vacation and
yeah.
And we have it, you know, set in months, and we work on calendars, and just, you know, we broke down holidays and we broke down custody. Like, we broke down custody in a capacity as well, where we listed these certain amount of people, but Hartley ultimately gets the choice.
Mm.
Our son gets the choice of where he goes.
Okay.
We never wanted to take that away from him.
Gotcha.
So we have, okay, these are the people that mom and dad trust. Mm-hmm. You get to choose from these people who you want to live with,
mm-hmm.
you know, but that person also has to be willing to come into the picture, be where he's at,
mm-hmm.
and then parent him from there. So it's a whole thing. And it's like, after, I think it was planning for 3 years, and then these last couple, you know, a couple of years of raising Hartley, things come up.
Wow.
Things come up. And so I tell everyone, they're like, what's one piece of advice that you could give? I'm like, unpack your shit. Unpack all your mental trauma. You know, what you think makes you you.
Right.
And where it doesn't fit with your narrative now, because being a parent is probably the most unselfish thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah.
Unselfish. And there are times where I have a tantrum and I'm like, I want to be selfish. I want to do it. You're going to do what I say. And my son's like, yeah, psych. I don't think so, mom. And it's a very humbling experience too. So.
Wow. Oh my gosh. My mind is spinning right now. I had no idea. I know some of those details of like, yeah, I've heard that mm-hmm. as well. Like, get a lawyer and mm-hmm. all of that. But like, yeah, the mental health piece
mm-hmm.
of both of your, that is fascinating.
Yeah.
And just the intentionality that goes into that creating mm-hmm. it, and the 3 years leading up to it and updating that plan. Like, it feels mm-hmm. like everyone should be doing that. I mean, people who don't, quote unquote, have to do that, I feel like should yeah. be also doing that.
Because these things come about. And then even with like lesbian couples, like that, you know, use the other's egg, like you right. still have to adopt that child to have any rights.
Right.
So we wanted to make sure to cover both of our rights.
Totally.
And it's like, when you say attorney, people are like, you don't trust me. It's like, that's a trigger. What are you worried about? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like me, I was very like, I don't want to file with the courts. I don't want to do this. Like, they're going to find some way to do something and take our baby. And it was all fear. It's all fear that I've had, you know, being raised by, you know, having that immigrant mentality.
Right.
Like, you get anything legal involved, something bad's going to happen. So
totally. That's such yeah. a good point. Yeah. Do you feel like you were able to find someone to work with who felt safe?
So we decided to only kind of like legalize it with the courts, like notarize it and things mm-hmm. like that. A judge looks it over, signs it off, or doesn't. And so we're at that point, like everything's been notarized. We finalized everything this past, I guess, reevaluation, I guess, in essence, or of the parental agreement. We're actually trying to write, or we're in the processes of, I still have my parts to do, trying to write a co-parenting book.
Okay.
Just about how our process was, and not being like, we're the experts, but being like, this is just our story and we want to tell it to you guys. Take what you can
yeah.
and run with it and make your own story.
Oh my God.
You know, we just want to share the information that we have come across in these last, you know, 6-7 years of planning and, you know, 10, wow. 12 years of being friends. And we even have it in there that if we feel that the other one is not mentally fit, we have the right to enact, like, you need to go see a therapist. So mm-hmm. now I've been in therapy for almost 3 years. Lawrence is in therapy. And then we also have a family therapist.
Wow. Amazing.
So just to make sure that it's neutral, just to make sure that both sides are being heard, but also for Hartley.
Yeah.
So that, you know, it's not like we're going to therapy because something's wrong. It's we're going to therapy so that you know, I don't have these tools. Your dad doesn't have these tools, but somebody else has these tools.
Totally.
Somebody else has the pieces that we need in order for us to hear you properly and make sure that you feel heard and safe.
Totally. And then that really normalizes it for him too. Mm-hmm. It's like everyone mm-hmm. has a therapist.
Yeah, everyone has a therapist. Can't talk to mom and dad about it. Go talk to your therapist. Exactly. Make sure you're in a safe space.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I love that so much. I'm so pro therapy myself.
I wasn't. I was like, you want me to go to therapy because something's wrong with me?
Right.
Like, I came from that generation.
Right.
Like, nothing's ever going to get fixed. But it was all my trauma mm-hmm. that became my personality. And then I realized that I can change.
Right.
That even though imposter syndrome tells you have to be one way for the rest of your life, that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
And I always try to teach, you know, my son that, like, I talk to him about all his emotions and identifying different emotions.
Totally.
And it's hard. It's hard when you're Latina and you're so used to, like, sit there and shut up and everything's going to be fine.
Right.
And you're just feeling feelings.
Right.
To, okay, babe, let's sit down and talk. Like, you're angry right now. Cool. I'm going to go into the other room. You calm down and then we'll have a discussion and we'll try to identify what's going on.
Totally.
So I started that when he was around like 1 or 2, you know, before I wouldn't leave the room, I'd be like, baby, tell me what you can, or, you know, we have like a whole chart where it's like, you can hug your teddy bear or you can count to 10 or,
yes.
you know, my partner, my girlfriend, she's taught him how to deep breathe. And I'm like, you can take some deep breaths. Ugh. Like, let's calm our nervous system down.
Amazing.
You know, I'm like, sometimes me and my girlfriend are like, man, I wish I had that as a parent.
Exactly. Like, and this is how we break generational trauma. You were talking about earlier how parenting has really been like a driving force for you to do these, you know, good things in the world and create these safe spaces. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it also, for me, it feels so motivating to break these cycles, to not pass it on. Well, I'm so glad you're writing a book. I can't wait to read this book.
Yeah, we're trying to get it out there and do these things. Like, we had some stuff potentially going with Netflix as well, and that kind of fell through. And it was, you know, just trying to find different ways to tell our story. Like, we did the 9 months with Courtney Cox, you know, and that was a way for us to tell our story.
Yeah.
You know, and she gave us that platform and it was really beautiful.
Amazing. Yeah. I want to hear about that. How did that happen? And what was it like?
So it was so funny because when we first saw the casting for it, we were so mad. We were so mad because we were like, this is our story. You know, past traumas, defense.
Right.
And it was, I think we called up because we had already done E, you know, what happens at the Abbey. So we had some previous connections. And so we called them and they called the casting of those people. And they're like, this is their story. And they got us on immediately. They were like, great. So we went through the interview process and it was really awesome because at that time it wasn't like cameras in your face.
Okay.
It wasn't a production company that's like, we're going to do this and set up this scene. It was, here is a couple of iPhones. Here are some tripods and record what you want to record.
Nice.
You know, they would ask for some sound bites here and there and things like that. But it was honestly one of the easiest processes that I went through.
Oh, amazing.
E was not so much.
Okay.
But, you know, with Courtney, it was very authentic. And it was like me and Lawrence were under the agreement, like, okay, are we going to record this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when you put yourself in that spotlight, you put yourself up to be analyzed. You put yourself up for criticism.
Totally.
And then when you're having imposter syndrome, it's not the easiest thing to do because it's like, I don't want to share this because I don't want people to think that I'm trying to get attention.
Right.
But you're not trying to get attention. You're just trying to share your story.
Right.
And see if it resonates with it. And we didn't realize how many people would resonate with this story. It was kind of hard for us to believe at first. It was a whole thing when we had our, you know, gender reveal party, which was on the show, you know, and people were like, you shouldn't be having a gender reveal party because you're part of the queer community. And I was like, hey,
right.
I'm like, look, I have friends who are trans. I have friends who have M to F, F to M. I have friends all over the spectrum in this acronym. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and I respect everybody's decision to be who they want to be. Do not put your gender conformities on my child.
Right.
If my son comes to me one day and says, "Mommy, I feel like a girl," I'm going to be like, "Okay, I have a friend who is M to F. Can we, let's have this conversation with them."
Right.
And because mama doesn't know.
Yeah.
And so this is what I've identified things as. If you identify as something differently, I have a friend on every end of the spectrum, non-binary, you know, gender fluid, all of them. And
yeah.
There's too many to remember sometimes, but I have one from each.
Right.
And if we ever get to those crossroads, it's going to be like, okay, I have a safe person who can give you that's been through this process, you know, and that I align with. Because, you know, if you want to change your body and you want to change certain things, that's a big decision. I'm not going to tell you no,
right.
But I'm going to tell you really think about this and talk to the people who know and their journey, because I can only tell you mine.
Right, right. Totally. I love that.
So having that platform with Courtney Cox to really be like, this is just our narrative, and have that massive vulnerability. You know, Lawrence dealing with his drinking, you know, issues and making that public, you know, to be under scrutiny for that, that's a big move. And
yeah,
one thing that we did not share, and that I do want to make aware to people, is, you know, they did try to medically kidnap my son.
No.
They tried to say that I was on antidepressants and I did not test positive for antidepressants. There was, it was like an over the counter sleeping pill that I took half of that my OB told me to take.
Oh gosh.
And it was over the counter. There was one nurse that just could not wrap her head around whatever it was, whether we were people of color, gay,
right.
Or, you know, I had asked one question. They were like, "Oh, I'm," cause I asked, you know, "Where are you taking him now?" They're like, "We're going to test his blood. We're going to do this. We're going to do that." And I'm like, "Okay, great." And they're, you know, "We test him for ABCXYZ." And I just asked, I said, "What happens if you find drugs in a kid's system?"
Yeah.
And there she was like, "We'll take your baby."
Wow.
And I was like,
"Oh my God.
What?" And I was like, "Okay." And so I was super off put by that. The next thing I know, CPS is in our room.
No. Ugh.
And the white nurse that was at the desk, I said, "Hey, I need some answers."
Yeah.
"Or we're going to have issues." Like,
right.
"We're going to have issues if you're not giving me the answers that I need and you're trying to keep me in the dark."
Oh my God.
And then I heard her on the phone, you know, she's threatening me.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm 2 days postpartum. And me and my mom walk over there and she's like, "Yeah, she's standing right in front of me and she's threatening me and da 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 da." And my mom is right there. And she almost went mama bear. I said, I put my hand on my mom's hand. I said, "Do not even give her the time of day."
Right.
And so the security comes up to me and he's like, "You're going to need to wait in the lobby." And I was like, "I am 2 days postpartum. Do you see me in this hospital gown? Like,
wow.
I just gave birth." And it wasn't until a Latina nurse came in and she was like, "I'm so sorry. Like, this isn't, you know, we're going to have to do blah, blah, blah." And me and my mom were talking to her in Spanish and we were like, "Don't even try to play us."
Right.
We were like, "We know exactly what this was."
Right.
"You tell your white nurse that was not okay." Like, you know, and people ask me, like, "Why wouldn't you fight it?" I said, "Why would I?"
Right.
"Why would I try to fight a system that doesn't work for me?"
Totally.
You know, but now there's so many other places. Like, I think there's AskTia, there's Kind Body, there's all these different places. I would highly suggest people go the doula route to make sure you have somebody who advocates for you.
Yes.
Or go to a birthing center. And, you know, if you do want to have a medical birth, make sure that you're going to a hospital that aligns with your values.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that where my doctor was doing her residency was a religious hospital.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That is, I just feel infuriated throughout my whole body that happened to you.
Yeah, my postpartum depression and my postpartum anxiety flared up.
I
wouldn't let even Lawrence take Hartley anywhere.
Right.
I was like, no.
Right.
And I didn't leave the house. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I have to keep my baby with me at all times. So being, you know, a child of an immigrant and having that happen.
Right.
And then having to take my child the next day and put a little bag over him. And, you know, I think it was within that week. And then test him again.
Ugh.
And then potentially have to, you know, go through the whole situation again.
Right.
But thankfully he tested negative. And I was like, I told you.
Right.
Well, you know, we had to go to our pediatrician. But I was like, I told you.
Right.
I told you.
Yeah.
I was like, you guys didn't even, that nurse didn't even check my medical records to see what my doctor had prescribed me.
Right.
I was like, you found sleeping medication. Yes. That my doctor told me to get that was over the counter.
Right. Right. So wow.
Just may always make sure you have somebody that advocates for you and always communicates to your partner how to advocate.
Yes.
Because I feel that was another thing that me and Lawrence didn't necessarily have. Mm-hmm. And it's no jab to him. I think he was just very like, this is your body. You make the choices.
Sure.
When in fact I needed somebody to
right.
step up and say, that's not okay.
Right.
This is not okay.
Totally. Thank you for sharing that with us. I think that is so important for people to know and to be active, proactive about protecting themselves in the medical system.
Absolutely. Especially for LGBTQ and BIPOC.
Exactly. Individual. Exactly. Ugh. That's infuriating. I wanted to back up a little bit and ask if you've kind of answered this already, but do you recommend like going about building a family in this way? Or like, what have been some of the pros and cons?
I mean, pros are that I have a solid person that I know that I'm going through this entire process with.
Yeah.
Whatever cons or bumps in the roads we might hit, I think that we both value making Hartley's life the best that it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And so as long as we keep that in mind and put ourselves and our egos to the side,
mm-hmm.
you know, we can continue to raise our child in, you know, an amicable and loving environment.
Right.
We have currently like separated households,
mm-hmm.
which was always the plan in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
Was to separate households, you know, to try to live our own lives.
Right.
You know, we can't live together forever, you know,
right.
We can keep a little house on the prairie situation, but in all actuality, it's like, okay, we really need to just live our own lives for our mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have a partner now and she's very much a part of Hartley's life. Like he calls her Mama Blue.
Aww.
Like, yeah, I have two mamas.
Ugh.
Like, you do have two mamas.
I love that.
And yeah, and now she lives with us and then building their relationship, you know, after us being together for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and then moving in just recently.
Uh-huh.
And so that's the major pro.
Okay.
Is that you have somebody that, or I had somebody that I could make my narrative with.
Right.
Like, hey, I have this idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would just suggest, you know, the cons are people grow apart. But you have to find a way to grow together,
right.
and grow apart in a place of love,
right.
instead of a place of fear or abandonment.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I would say.
I love that. Yeah. That's so cool. And I love having the idea of having a friend to build that plan with versus a romantic partner feels mm-hmm. a lot more like there's more space there for safety or growth, or you know, mm-hmm. that it's like it's more of like an intentional, like we're gonna plan this and do this instead of just like I hope this works out.
Yeah. And I mean, I would suggest even the process that we've been through doing that, if you do it with your partner, you know, having these same conversations.
Exactly.
Because you have to build that friendship. Like one thing that I can say about my relationship is that we have a friendship. We have mm-hmm. a solid respect and understanding of one another in that capacity. You know,
right.
it gets a little twisted sometimes because of the intimacy, but even though Lawrence and I have never been intimate, like at mm-hmm. all, you know, mm-hmm. there's still a form of intimacy that has yet to be identified that you
right.
have to have with this person
right.
because you got to find, okay, how can I provide for you? How can mm-hmm. I, you know, advocate for you? How can I be here for you, you know, without making it about myself?
Right. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I completely agree. I feel like this co-parenting book is going to be so applicable to literally every parent who's parenting with someone else.
I mean, when we were talking and pitching our show idea and everything, like we had people like heterosexual couples that are like, can you send us that agreement? Like, can we look at that? Because, you know, and it gets you thinking, it kind of just gives you a template, you know, to
right.
to go from there. Like, you don't have to copy exactly what we did. Like, that's not what we're saying, but we're saying, you know, take some of these questions, take the parts that resonate with you and then create your own narrative.
Yeah, exactly.
If it works for you to, you know, I'm glad that I did it the way that I did it because I was able to really do something for myself that mm-hmm. I wanted for me And it wasn't mm-hmm. for a partner. I had been in and out of relationships, almost, you know, engaged and in a toxic situation. And it was toxic, toxic, toxic after one after the other, or getting into a situation where I was pregnant, you know, where they were trying to be the second mother already. And I'm like, no,
right.
I am my child's mother. This is the experience that I want to have for me.
Yeah.
You know, and people were like, well, what about a partner? I'm like, what about a partner?
Yeah.
The right person will come along when it's the time. But right now, I just want this experience. Like, would I have loved to have my partner with me now, the partner that I have now? Oh my God. Yes, absolutely. Right. I would have loved to have her because she's definitely the one.
Right.
But at that time she wasn't there and I would have been waiting forever.
Right.
So not forever, but I would have been waiting longer than I wanted to. So yeah. I took my own narrative into my hands and said, this is what I want to do with my life.
Right.
And the person that, you know, I will end up with will be there. And I didn't want to date for the first year of my son's life.
Right.
So I was like, no, I want to have this experience. I want to not be distracted by an intimate relationship when I wanted to build an intimate bond with my child.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I love it so much. This is so inspiring. I love this story.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I would love to know, like, what's next for you? Like, what are you excited about? What are your projects, upcoming projects? What else are you doing?
So right now with the wing, we're working on a partnership right now. I've formed myself and two other individuals who live in New York. We are building out a committee to host a yearly gala, as well as networking events for BIPOC and LGBTQ.
Oh my gosh. Amazing.
Yes. So the wing is an amazing space that we're going to start utilizing. And the great thing is they have one in LA. They have three in New York. They have Boston and Chicago coming. They have San Francisco. So all these major cities, we're going to be now building these networking events around with our sponsors, and just kind of hitting all the points in the LGBTQ community that don't have a space yet, like mothers. Or, you know, there was a term and I can't remember, but it's pretty much the non-carrying partner, you know, or if just all the different variations. Like, I have so many queer friends that have done so many different things.
Right.
You know, my friend Whitney carried by and did it by herself. And I'm like, I have no idea how you did that. But, you know, I'm like, props to you, dude. And, you know, partnering with other companies that want to sponsor, you know, our writers, our painters, our, you know, sex therapists, our doulas, our just everybody in general, and letting people know, like, in every phase of your life, you'll be able to have a high end experience. Like, we don't have to constantly be in the bars. You know, I'm in a point in my life where I want to actually talk to somebody. You know, I don't want to get schmammered and yell over music. I want to have a solid conversation and help somebody, you know, with their business. If I can't help you, you know, then I know somebody who can, you know. If I don't know numbers, I know my space. And that's the great thing about our committee, is that everybody has their space, but everybody has a solid network. It's kind of like the chart. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the chart from the L Word?
Oh, yes. The chart.
Yes. So, but it takes up more than just a wall, it takes up a whole room.
Oh my gosh.
Because, you know, so many people in the queer community, like, I swear to God, if we all came together, we could probably take over the world.
Yeah, I agree.
They would have no chance. They would have no chance. But, you know, and then also letting people, you know, our allies know, like our BIPOC allies, like, yes, come sit down with us, talk, like, let's all find ways to push each other forward. Because now, you know, I feel like with COVID being over, everyone's kind of been like, okay, what's really making me happy? You had these last 2 years to sit with yourself and say, what is it that I want to leave on the world?
Right.
What is it that I want to let people know? And I want to let people know that, you know, there is a space. Mm-hmm. And there is money out there for BIPOC and LGBTQ people. You know, you just have to know where to find it. And we're making it a space where we're going to help you find it.
Oh my gosh. Incredible.
And we're going to help your voice be heard.
Wow. Yeah. I love that. And do you think you'll expand to more cities too?
Yeah, absolutely.
At some point. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the wing is, like, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, we're having that solid partnership You know, we have Latinas in cannabis and all kinds of other stuff across the spectrum where it can be used in every city.
Incredible.
It can be used everywhere. So anywhere there's a wing, there will be a way. It's called Unite Gala. And we want to host a gala at least twice a year, but we're going to host our first one in the winter.
Okay.
We're aiming for the winter, and we'll have that at the wing in WeHo.
Okay. Amazing. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So we want to have people who have podcasts and books and all these things. And so we'll take submissions and submit them to the wing, and, you know, they use their network, and it's all a little chess game.
Oh, that sounds incredible. Oh my gosh. And is there a website or something where people can go?
We do have unitegala.org.
Okay.
Where you can see all of our people in our committee right now, where to donate. If there's any businesses, you know, our companies that want to donate and sponsor, you know, our artists and things and everything to just throw the gala. There's packages that they get, you know, we use our network to make sure that we promote it. Like, yeah, we're going to have our first fundraising event in June, but Pride doesn't stop just in June for us. If you support the LGBTQ community, you have no problem giving that money for December. You have no problem. Like, and if you're not allocating that, then that's somebody that we don't want to vibe with.
Totally.
It's like, it's going to be all year round. And so that's what me and myself and my team and the wing can agree on, is that it needs to be a consistent thing, not just during Pride Month. You can't just highlight BIPOC and LGBTQ people on certain months. It should be all year round.
Exactly. Yeah. I love that. Cool. I'll definitely include that in the show notes so people can find that easily.
That would be great. Yeah. And then just launching my skincare line. I've developed a skincare line. I'm a licensed esthetician. I currently work with Lena Waith. I've been working with her for a while now.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That's she just hit all the red carpets with like no makeup on her face. And it's a dreamy situation.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
And so, just launching my skincare line and, you know, expanding on that, you know, finding different formulas and creams for people of color and, you know, LGBTQ individuals. Like, I'm working on a treatment for top surgery scars now, how microneedling kind of fits into that. But also now there's vegan pigments that you can put into the skin, kind of like a tattoo. That will help shade, but it's all skin tones.
Wow.
So try to help shade and reduce the scarring and make things going. So I have a couple trials going right now to see the before and afters and stuff.
Oh my gosh. That's incredible.
Yeah.
And I think I cut you off a little bit. Did you say microneedling? Was that something that
microneedling? Okay. Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
Microneedling works really, really great for people of color
and
for scarring and for hyperpigmentation and for, you know, enlarged pores and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, interesting.
I could go into a whole thing.
A whole thing about microneedling. I love it.
A whole thing.
Can people buy your skincare from wherever?
They can. Okay. They can buy it on lunavibe.co. We're looking to hopefully expand into Ulta. And then I can also send you over the link that I just did with NBC California Live. And we talked about all of the pigments and all the different things. So I'll send that over to you.
Oh, incredible. Right. Okay, cool. And then I'll include that in the show notes too. That's fascinating.
Absolutely.
Wow. I had no idea about any of that. That's so cool.
Yes.
So something I love to ask every guest is, in Chinese medicine, our fertility is referred to as our essence. So the more we're able to get in touch with who we really are or our essence, the more access we have to our fertile potential or our creative power. Is there any practice or ritual that you have in place that allows you to connect with your essence or your whole self?
I mean, besides therapy.
Yeah. Yes.
Therapy is a huge part of me, you know, staying in my whole self.
Mm-hmm.
During my fertility journey, all the tools that I have now, I wish I had back then.
Mm.
But, you know, when you know better, you do better.
Sure.
But it just, I don't think I have very many practices. Now I do.
Yeah.
You know, I try to incorporate self-care and being gentle on myself, and, you know, I practice words of affirmation, you know, with myself, but also with my son, you know, and just looking at ourselves in the mirror and connecting. I think just for a large part of my life, I disassociated. So I was never fully in my body. So I could never fully be present. And that's actually something, you know, me and my girlfriend are working on. You know, she's like, I would love if you'd be more present. Like, you're very tentative, you're very this, that, and the other. She's like, but sometimes you just, and it's just trauma response. You know, so finding out, you know, where that is, and just really, you know, eating clean and drinking the juices and drinking the water, and we don't want to do it and it tastes like grass, but we gotta do it.
Yes. Nice. I love it. Cool. And I know you've already mentioned some websites and things, but is there anywhere else where folks can find you and support you and buy all your things?
On Instagram. On Instagram, all my stuff is linked on my Instagram, @BrandyJAndrews.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's where you can find me. You can book. I'm now doing online consultations, like virtual consultations.
Oh, cool.
To just help people all around the world and be like, you know, this is what I see in your skin. This is what I recommend. Let's help find you a person that can accomplish this for you.
Oh, incredible.
If you cannot come to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, incredible.
So expanding in that capacity.
Okay, that's fantastic. Great. Well, Brandy, thank you so much for coming on today. I learned so much.
Of course. Of course. And if you have any other questions, feel free to reach out.
Awesome. I will. Thanks so much, Brandy. Thanks for listening to the Intersectional Fertility Podcast. To get customized fertility recommendations based on your whole self fertility method element, join my mailing list at intersectionalfertility.com and get immediate access to my 2-minute quiz. If you like the show and want to hear more, tap subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And please leave us a review. It really, truly helps. The Intersectional Fertility Podcast is hosted by me, Josie Rodriguez-Boucher, and produced by Rosary Productions, with original music by Jen Cordy.